It's time to eat.
Get in my belly.
Sit down and get ready to consume an abundance of fantasy football knowledge from Ross Tucker and Evan Silva.
Me so hungry.
On the Fantasy Feast Eatin' Podcast.
Yeah, let's eat, baby. It is the final Fantasy Feast podcast of July. Training camps are opening next week. We've got tears of Evan because it's August. You know who I'm talking about. The star of the podcast, Evan Silva from rotoworld.com. Check him out on Twitter, at Evan Silva. We are all over breaking down our MyFFPC.com draft. Thanks to those guys, Alex and the guys over at MyFFPC.com for that draft, that league, those entries. You can check them out on Twitter, at FFPC. We are presented today by betonline.ag, the online gaming website of choice for the Fantasy Feast podcast with the best odds and the fastest payouts. I'm Ross Tucker, former NFL offensive lineman that gets more and more fantasy knowledgeable every year. I'm not like Evan. I'm not like one of these guys, but I feel pretty good about my general knowledge at this point. Good enough that I'm going to kick some butt in the August MFL 10 against this week's contestants, Josh Forsythe, Dave Sanders, Kelly Phillips, and Barry from Hawaii, who had a bad email address. That's why he didn't get into myffpc.com league. Barry gave us an Amazon purchase. Same with Dave Sanders. Dave had a big Amazon purchase. Kelly Phillips had an Amazon purchase. He emailed me, ross at rostucker.com. That included buying Warren Sharp's book, which was awesome, Kelly. That's how you got in, by the way, dude. By buying Warren's book, which I thought was cool. And Josh Forsythe just took care of business by downloading the SeatGeek app on his phone and putting in the code Ross. So we got $20 back. SeatGeek app, the best in the planet. Evan and I will decide after today's show exactly what the contest is starting next week. But at any rate, it's going to be some type of fantasy football league. So send in your entries ASAFP. Yeah, you heard me. I put an F in there. Just take advantage of any of the sponsors over at RossTucker.com or that Amazon banner ad and forward it to me, Ross at RossTucker.com. I didn't even think we needed necessarily a guest on today's show, but Evan is so obsessed with this guy, he said, yes, we need him. He spits fire. Who you got, Evan?
Yeah, it's Rich Rebar. He's never been on the show before, and he'll kind of, you know, tell you why. I mean, he's, you know, he recently became a full-time fantasy analyst. So he didn't necessarily have free, you know, Wednesdays. That's when we record in the morning. He's doing other stuff. You know, he's working. But now he's, I think he works from home, and he is the best fantasy football analyst in the business. And he also has a really good grasp, I think, on knowing real football and knowing how to separate real football from fantasy football. And that, I think, gives him another advantage, you know, on the competition in terms of being an analyst. He's phenomenal, man. He's good at DFS. He can tell you about best ball. He can tell you about dynasty. He plays in Devi leagues, which Devi is like short for developmental leagues that, I mean, they're looking at guys, you know, like they're paying attention to like rivals recruiting rankings, or I'm sure they have, you know, something maybe even better than that to lean on. But like they start at, you know, freshmen in college, dudes coming out of high school. I mean, he has just a wealth of knowledge. He is an excellent dude on any podcast. Anytime you see a podcast with Rich Rebar on there, listen to it. I promise you, you will learn something. I certainly do. And I mean, I pour my life into this. And yet, every time that I listen to Rich talk about football or fantasy football, I always learn something new. So We are going to start out with kind of breaking down the FFPC format, where we as members of the Fantasy Feast League in the FFPC format, we did a draft together, $35 entry, and we're going to kind of break that draft down and break down some strategies for that format, and then we're going to talk about a bunch of players.
I love it. Let's do it.
Next meal.
Well, as promised, we are going to break down the MyFFPC.com draft that we recently wrapped up, 28 rounds with Evan, myself, and a bunch of you, the great listeners of the Fantasy Feast, with Rich Rebar, known on Twitter as @LordRebs. He works for RotoWorld, so there's a lot to get to there. Rich, I got like five questions for you before I even hand you off to Evan to go over the draft. Let's start with the fact that you might have the best two combo pictures on your Twitter profile of anybody I know. I mean, the Zach Morris Saved by the Bell cell phone with Tecmo Bowl. I mean, it's really, really impressive. I give you major props for it.
Oh, I appreciate it. Yeah, I'm an 80s, 90s baby, so, I mean, that stuff was right in my wheelhouse. I mean, the Zach Morris avatar, you can't go wrong. I mean, Zach Morris is the iconic pop culture icon of our time, basically. And the thing that I love about Zach Morris, it never mattered. He always had it figured out. He always had a plan, no matter what the situation was. And that picture kind of invokes, you know, it kind of has that look with the cell phone of, you know what, it'll be all right, I got this.
Yeah, so, I mean, I always had a huge crush on Kelly Kapowski, whatever her real name is, Tiffany Amber Thiessen or whatever. And then, what was it? I mean, I remember I'm like a teenager, then I'm watching a show where Jessica Spano is like getting after it. I don't know what her real name is either, but she was like in some stripper movie or something. That changed quickly from Saved by the Bell to her being
the
in that
showgirl.
Movie. Showgirls, there you go. What's her real name?
Her real name is Elizabeth Berkeley.
That's right, exactly. So what are you, Rich? Are you late 30s, early 40s?
Yeah, mid-30s. I just turned 35 in June, so, I mean, I'm right there. I'm at the cusp here.
Nice. I'm 38, so you're I have much respect for your Twitter profile pics. You got to give me the background. Now, you're a full-time guy now at RotoWorld, and what were you doing before that?
Yeah, I started Memorial Day full-time. Like I said, mid-30 life change. I was working in hydraulic seals. I was a product manager for a hydraulic seal company for 14 years prior to that, and just kind of was doing fantasy as a hobby and making some side money through DFS and doing the writing thing. And an opportunity, you know, kind of manifested into the situation now. And Evan kind of knocked some doors down for me and made it easy. You know, it is all about who you know still, no matter how good you are. So, I mean, Evan was able to get me in and beat the drum a little bit to get the RotoWorld brass, you know, extend a real branch to me full time. And here we are.
Dude, you went from 14 years as a product manager of hydraulic fuel to now you're a full-time fantasy guy. That is amazing.
Yeah, I'm pretty blessed in that regard. It was a tough life change, though, you know, just because, you know, I'd always done fantasy as a hobby and it was never, you know, a crutch. So to just jump all in and say, well, this is how I'm going to support my family for the next, you know, foreseeable future, you know, it was tough. It wasn't like these opportunities weren't around when we were 20 years old, you know, coming out of college. You know, none of these jobs existed, so. You know, be able to get one now at 35 was one of those things that was scary, but you always want to be able to do something in life that you really want to pursue and you enjoy. So, I mean, it was still a call that I had to make.
All right. So you got to tell me, what is Evan like as a boss? Cause I think we've had other RotoWorld guys and I've asked that, but I don't remember what they said. Number one and number two, I still can't imagine.
Yeah, Evan is tough, man. He's a tough critic, but it's good. He wants the best. I mean, that's why he is the way he is. That's why he's on the pantheon of fantasy football knowledge, because he wants to be surrounded by the best people and he wants to get the best work out of them. So he makes sure that I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing, and he's critiquing me, you know, the full level. I mean, he definitely is riding me. I'm trying to learn the news and cover the news for Roto World, but man, he's a tough guy cracking the whip there.
All right, so we brought you on to talk about the MyFFPC.com draft that we had. And Evan's going to have a bunch of specific questions for you. I guess I have two, probably. I'll save the one for the end in case Evan asks it. But I had the fourth pick. Now, this was a couple weeks ago. It should be noted. But I had the fourth pick. There were some rumors about Zeke Elliott out there. But I looked at it, and I just looked at the other options because David Johnson, Le'Veon Bell, Antonio Brown were off the board. And I could have gone Gronk because I love him, or A.J. Green or Julio Jones or Odell Beckham Jr. I went Zeke Elliott because I thought, okay, at the time, maybe he'll be suspended for one game, but I'm still fine there in a best ball league. He'll put up big numbers the rest of the year. I guess it's a hindsight 2020 thing, but how much do you hate my selection of Zeke with the fourth overall pick now?
Oh, I don't hate it still. I mean, it's different from a season. This is still a best ball league, yes?
Yes.
Yeah, so, I mean, that changes things a lot. You're still insulated and covered those opening weeks, so you're not taking a for sure zero no matter what. I mean, whereas, you know, say Zeke is suspended in your weekly leagues, you're using high draft capital on a pick that now is occupying just a roster spot. You know, when that's the highest turnover rate for when the waivers are the hottest. You know, we find these guys at the beginning of the year, opportunities that didn't exist. We're trying to scoop those guys up as quickly as possible. Now, Zeke in your regular league is a guy you're not going to cut. You're going to hang on to him and ride it out. So you're okay still. I think that we don't know still. He still may be one game. It might be three. I think if it's anything three or less, he still warrants first-round selection in fantasy drafts. I mean, we just went through this with Le'Veon Bell a year ago, and Le'Veon Bell was in a situation where he was one strike away from missing the entire season, and still is. You know, he's still in that system. Whereas Zeke is going to get hit with the suspension, and is not going to initially set off a chain reaction where he's going to be out for another year, or the next incident, or anything else. Going to go through a process. So, I mean, there's some risk still. We just don't know what the suspension is going to be, but I think he's still going to be fine and be a high-end fantasy pick once he comes back, given the situation and the offense he's involved in.
All right, Evan, I'll let you have your turn for a while.
Yeah, and I do drafts with Rich, and, I mean, Rich just got Zeke at, was it 1.10 or 1.11 in that MFL 10 with Scott Pianowski?
Yeah, I took him at 111. I mean, I feel like that's candy right there. I mean, it's when you're talking about in the range of Michael Thomas and, you know, the guys in that area. I mean, I'm going to take Zeke there every time.
And so because it is a best ball league, would you be willing to take Darren McFadden later? Or do you think that does not maximize that roster spot enough? Or do you think that McFadden is worth it just to lock up that Cowboys backfield?
Yeah, yes and no. In this, you've got some extra roster to play with. So, I mean, in the FFPC format, so, I mean, you've got some leeway and some stacking privileges there. I'm more likely, if I'm going to stack running backs, I prefer to be guys that occupy different roles. So that way you, in theory, occupy all the touches. You know, a situation that just arose, maybe Terrence West and Danny Woodhead. You get all the touches. You get the best of both worlds. No matter what the game script invokes, you're going to have that player producing. Or you want to look at an offense that is producing such a high leverage amount of points that's what matters. So teams like the Patriots, teams like the Saints, you can stack Mark Ingram, Adrian Peterson, and that team produces so many buckets of points that you're able to stack those points. Whereas your typical handcuff, Zeke and Darren McFadden, you're essentially killing two roster spots for one guy. There's not going to be weeks where those guys can overlap. There's not going to be, you know, a lot of opportunity there. You're basically just having McFadden cover your spot. I would more like to pursue McFadden on a team where I don't have Zeke, and preferably one where I've gone wide receiver heavy, where I'm just trying to throw running backs weeks at a wall, and I can take some of those initial 3 weeks and before my guy that's a 12th round picker later and get three or four starting weeks out of that spot. So, I mean, that's the way. I mean, I like stacking. I'm not so much into handcuffing because, like I said, you're really, I mean, handcuffing is just like it would be described. You're restricting roster space.
Yeah, and Rich and I recently did, it was two nights ago, we did a pros versus Joes, which is this exact same scoring system, okay? It's 28 rounds, and it's tight end premium, and it's PPR, and you start two flex spots every week. And Rich took Mike Gillisley in the seventh, and then Rex Burkhead way later to really get a good grip on that Patriots backfield. I mean, there are obviously other players in the backfield that are probably going to score fantasy points this year, you know, most notably James White. But you got the two biggest backs in that backfield. And, you know, the second one came at a very low cost. And really the first one did, too, for his upside. For Mike Gillisley's upside, you know, getting him in the seventh round, that's a pretty sweet deal. So in this scoring format, Rich, do you have any general thoughts on roster constructions in FFPC drafts? Specifically, we're going to be talking about FFPC drafts more, I think, on the next show as well. But, you know, entering the pros versus Joes draft, or any time that you are drafting in this FFPC format that I just described, you know, what are your general thoughts on roster allocation to positions and roster construction in general?
Well, roster allocation doesn't change so much because the roster spots are similar to like an MFL 10. I'm sure you guys have covered those in length and, you know, and similar to the draft best ball. I mean, there's 28 roster spots here, but there's kickers also involved as well where the other sites don't have. So you're still, you know, you want to allocate three guys to the kicker and defense positions. So you're really talking about 22 positional players the rest of the way out. So it's not much different than the other two leagues. The difference here in the FFPC format is you've got the tight end premium scoring where tight ends get 1.5 points per reception as opposed to one for running backs and wide receivers. And you also are only required to start two wide receivers in the FFPC format, whereas you're required to start three in the other formats. And you have two flex spots, so you can start three tight ends. You can have four wide receivers or four running backs fill those spots, you know, throughout your league. So, I mean, the 1.5 PPR for tight ends really inflates the position. You'll see the tight ends go a lot higher in these drafts than they will in your normal drafts. And there's still a supply and demand element that should be applied to fantasy. But because there's less required capital that you'd put in wide receiver position in terms of having to start three and then having to throw more at the position, because wide receiver is a volatile position through injuries and performance of the week, you have to throw more players at that position to get more starts out of position. You have that one less starting requirement spot here, so it's not as much as a go in all in at wide receivers that it would be in like an MFL 10. So you got the elevation of the tight ends and the one less receiver spot. So tight ends go a lot higher. You have to kind of get in on the tight end race early and kind of get one of your guys. I like to get one of the top 10 guys for sure if I can. You can do a quantity over quality approach as well. You probably want to throw four or five guys at that because the tight end position carries the least weekly replicability of all the positions for baseline output on a weekly level. It's harder to find players carrying that consistent advantage over the field for the entirety of a season at the tight end position than any other position. I mean, you look at tight ends that produce a starting caliber week, which is in a 12-team league, a top 12 scoring week, just 70% of those guys do it twice, and then just 54% of them do it three times in a year or more. So, I mean, it progressively gets worse where it's a lot higher rates at the running back, wide receiver position. So, I mean, if you're going to take a quantity over quality approach, you want to do it with not bottom tier guys like the Jermaine Greshams and the Deion Sims types, the Jesse James guys. You want to do it with guys in that mid-pack. You want to do it with guys like Jack Doyle, Martellus Bennett, Antonio Gates, guys in that, like, ADP from tight end 10 to 20. You know, that's where you want to throw your quantity approach at. But yeah, that tight end position makes a big difference.
It does make a big difference, but it also makes a big difference in terms of where the tight ends are drafted. So do you think that in this kind of a format, people have a tendency to overvalue the tight ends. I mean, it's really only, you know, 0.5 more points per reception, and tight ends don't even tend to catch a ton of passes, you know, relative to, you know, wide receivers, obviously, and even some running backs can compete with a lot of tight ends in terms of catch total. So do you think that people have a tendency to overvalue the tight ends because the format kind of highlights them a little bit?
Oh, yeah. They're still not scoring on a weekly level as many points as wide receivers and running backs at the top end. And like I told you, they aren't doing it at a consistent basis as the other positions. So that's a big problem. I think that's where I generally try not to throw high draft capital in, even in these leagues. I mean, the league we were in, I kind of had a tier of guys I wanted to start targeting, and I took Eric Ebron, you know, a guy that's more reception-based tight end. He's not a guy that's going to score a lot of touchdowns, but he's going to get me a nice plateau of points to start at that position. But, yeah, the guys like Travis Kelce, is a first-rounder in these, like basically at the 1-2 turn. He's a guy that is basically – you know, he's a guy too that's not going to get you a lot of mega weeks because he's not a touchdown producer. And it's not because Travis Kelce isn't a touchdown producer. It's more his offense isn't a touchdown producing offense. I mean, he's never had more than 5 touchdowns in a season, and that's including last year when he had the best year of his career. So, I mean, they do get elevated a little highly. It's just one of those things too where it's a position wave. So if you're in a draft, I mean, you can't. So when the rest of your league is valuing these guys, can catch value for a little bit at the other positions, but eventually you're going to have to get on a wave or get caught in the wake.
Were there any teams, you know, I sent Rich a link to our draft, and just looking at the final results and the way that the teams constructed their rosters, was there anything that stood out to you, Rich, from just looking at the final roster construction for each team in our FFPC draft?
Hey, you know, I've been on Fantasy Ramadan for a long time, waiting to feast, and I finally get called to the table, and we're talking about a draft I wasn't a part of. But, you know, looking at these teams, I definitely, Ross, it sticks out that he went with the 1-kicker, 2-defense approach. I mean, That's a little. It's going to be tough because he's going to have to eat those Chris Boswell points every week. I mean, kicker and tight ends are high variance positions in fantasy, where it doesn't even really matter how good you are. The kickers are opportunity driven, so I mean, you're only getting what the offense sets up for you, whether it be extra points or place kicking for field goals. Chris Boswell's a guy, he only had 5 top 12 weeks last year and only 6 weeks in the top half of kicker scoring. So, I mean, granted he's not a good offense, but he also didn't have produced a lot of high end weeks. You also have a lot of turnover at the kicker position, you know, whether in season, you know, in these, we have a lot of guys that probably were drafted that probably won't end up making it through training camp. You know, the Giants kicker, I think, is Alex Rosas. I don't even know who he really is, but you got all these guys that end up don't kicking for the same teams or at cut in seasons. You need to throw more guys at those spots. Defense is the same way. It's very high variance because of the way it's scored for fantasy. It doesn't have a lot of general real tie over to real football. I mean, you look at a team like the Patriots, they allowed the fewest points in football last year, but were just an okay fantasy defense. They only had 5 top 12 weeks because they're middling in turnovers and sacks. They didn't score any defensive touchdowns. But for a fantasy defense, they were just okay. Whereas you have teams like the Saints producing more top 12 weeks than teams like the Dolphins because, it's like I said, it's just naturally high variance. Touchdowns matter. You have a team give up 25 points in a game and 400 yards and get shredded, but if they score a defensive touchdown and get some turnovers, they score. You kind of want to swerve in that variance, throw more guys at the wall there. I looking at teams here, I like that, you know, you and Evan, Ross and Evan, you guys through more volatility at the wide receiver position. We talk about these best ball leagues and where people try to generally decipher value in fantasy leagues through projections and ADP is they look at overall scoring and how it relates to where that player is going in drafts. But in these best ball leagues, you got to think about how these players score points. You want guys that have high upside in these leagues. You're trying to win the league. It, you know, a lot of these leagues don't pay out second and third places. You want to, you're trying to take the best score and for the season get the best score. And if you're talking about throwing guys at a wall here, I mean, especially like wide receivers, I mean, if you're throwing 10 wide receivers in your drafts at the wall here, you're talking about 160, you know, games that you're going to get of wide receivers in totality, but you only need 64 of those are going to start for you through the year if you're counting on them playing, even if you're adding the two flex spots in these leagues. So you want guys that score with high ceilings over low floor guys, because they're going to provide more points for you over the course of the season than those guys, those Cole Beasley's types guys will. You know, probably the best example you can think of is the Denver Broncos receivers. There's a reason Demaryius Thomas goes at the ADP he goes at. It's because he's had such a high floor and produces consistent points year to year. But when you look at how he scores his points through each week, it's because he just has a high floor. He's not a guy producing these high-end ceiling weeks, but he's going around high-end ceiling producers like Sammy Watkins, Allen Robinson, guys that he's probably better than in a season-long league because you know you're going to get more stable week-to-week production. But in here, you're not getting those high-end ceiling weeks. He's going 30 picks ahead of his cohort, same team, Emmanuel Sanders. But Emmanuel Sanders has more wide receiver one games over the past years post-Peyton Manning. He's got five top five scoring weeks where Demaryius Thomas only has one. So, I mean, you can't just totally look at the bulk production. You want to look at how these players score, and you want to look at who are the guys that are going to give me the highest ceiling per week. You want those Duke Johnsons, those Darren Sproles, those Shane Vereens, those guys to be a break glass in case of emergency. When my guys, my high-end DeSean Jacksons are getting me zeros, they can smooth out the roster points and get me those 9 or 10 points can plug into my lineup. But you don't want to rely on those 9 to 10 points every week.
Good stuff. And, you know, I looked over these drafts, and I looked at, like, Mike Concho and Roto Reapers teams, and I really like them. But then you look at the wide receiver position, and they just do not have enough firepower, you know, at the receiver position, I don't think. And because it's a PPR league, I mean, you really got to emphasize these dudes who catch passes. And Rich, in our Pros versus Joe's draft, he started wide receiver times five coming out the gates. And then took a bunch of running backs with, like, touchdown upside, like Eddie Lacy and I think you got Spencer Ware. So I thought that was an interesting approach and overall strategy. And then I looked at Alvin Silva's team. I guess this is like a play on my name. And he's really strong at every position. I think that he has one of the best teams in the league, but he's real, real weak at tight end. I mean, his group of four tight ends is David Njoku, rookie, Julius Thomas, who I think he's just going to be totally touchdown dependent week to week. Austin Seferian Jenkins, suspended for the first two games, you know, has a lot of talent, but you know, who knows what's going to happen year to year, you know, let alone week to week with ASJ, and then Crockett Gilmore, who, you know, he's like a pretty much a replacement level tight end. So he went with the four tight end late strategy, and but the rest of his team looks really, really strong. I wanted to ask you, Rich, about some more hot button players and some guys that you have hot takes on specifically, because you know you're one of the best player analysts, and we definitely want to get your thoughts on specific guys. Jarvis Landry is a hot button dude this year. Where do you stand on him as a fantasy pick in 2017?
Yeah, Landry's a tricky guy because he's a guy that is predicated on volume, the way he scores his fantasy points. And he's a guy also that is stacked to, you know, a lot of career production. I mean, only Odell Beckham has matched the number of receptions Landry's put up through the first 3 years of his career in NFL history. I mean, he's one of the best guys with the ball in space too. But when you look at the Dolphins and how they approach how Adam Gase has approached to a calling plays since he hasn't had Peyton Manning. And we saw that kind of come into play last year when they scrapped that running back by committee and kind of just went to Jay Ajayi. Landry lost just a ton of targets. I mean, he saw just seven targets per game over the final 2 weeks. That was 30th of all wide receivers in the league in targets. He was just 28th in PPR points per game over that stretch. After he caught seven or more passes in each of the opening four games, he caught five passes. He caught more than five passes in just three of the final 12 games. I mean, this is a guy you need to push 150 targets, not to push 125 targets. A lot of that was because Miami won games, and they probably won a lot of games they shouldn't have last year. I think that they'll come back to the pack in that regard this year. I don't think that they'll be a playoff team again. So, I mean, that volume could spike back up, but he's also a guy that the organization doesn't seem to be sold on as part of their future yet. I mean, they locked up Kenny Stills with a deal that was similar to the deal Kenny Britt got with the Browns. Devontae Parker has been on a career arc that's progressing. He got a lot better in year two. We probably expect that to continue. He's probably the most all-around talented receiver on that roster. So, I mean, how much is Landry a part of their future is into play a little bit too. You know, he's trying to get that contract extension. And the other thing too is Jarvis Landry just doesn't have like a really strong nose for the end zone. He's not a guy that is a high touchdown producer either. So, I mean, he's a guy that's a little tricky at his ADP. He's going around like wide receiver 18, wide receiver 20, and he just wasn't performing on that level when the Dolphins were occupying at the level of offense they wanted to run last year.
Brandon Marshall, you know, I really just don't know what he has left. How are you approaching him in drafts? How are you viewing the Giants' passing game this year? I feel like they have a lot of upside, but it's hard for me to buy in after how bad Eli Manning and really Brandon Marshall looked last season. Where do you kind of stand on the Giants' passing game this year?
Yeah, Marshall kind of gets a free pass a little bit because of the situation he was in, but he did not play great himself. I mean, his catchable target rate was the third worst in the league, so I mean it's not all his fault, but he also didn't make plays himself. He is going to a team though that is due for touchdown regression. I mean, when you look at how the Giants played those first 2 years under Ben McAdoo, they were scoring, you know, 42, 43 touchdowns a year. They were all the way down in the low 30s last year. I think that they're going to bounce back in that regard and being able to produce touchdowns, just because the offense last year was leaning on guys like Victor Cruz and Sterling Shepard, you know, who was a rookie slot receiver. I mean, Sterling Shepard's a fine player, had a really solid rookie year, but I mean, it's hard to run your offense through just those guys and with no running game. Now they're still completely built the pass. I mean, this is a team that ran three or more wide receivers out on 97% of their pass plays last year. That's going to happen again, given that the offensive line really isn't upgraded. I mean, they added a guy like Rhett Ellison who can contribute in the run game and help that out be a little bit better. But, I mean, you're talking about they added Brandon Marshall. They added Evan Ingram, who is really just a receiver coming into the NFL. They really didn't upgrade the running back position. The offensive line isn't a lot better. So, I mean, they're going to be a pass-heavy team again. Brandon Marshall instantly slaps in as a guy that is going to have a red zone impact the worst. He's going to walk into 100 targets, like I said, given the offense he's in. So, I mean, at like wide receiver 30-ish cost where he's going, I mean, I'm still fine as that being a price point because you're getting a little hedge of that his career regression and him being now the second option behind a guy now, which he hasn't been in an offense, you know, for his career. You kind of baked into his ADP.
Yeah, and some of the beat writers there have talked about how the Giants might be more personnel package diverse this year, but I'm not really buying that. I mean, that's going to still be a three-receiver team unless they're going to pull Sterling Shepard mm-hmm. off the field in certain instances. And so what is that going to mean for Evan Ingram's playing time? You know, are they going to need Rhett Ellison out there to help their bad offensive tackles block people? You know, because Evan Ingram is unlikely to contribute in that area as a rookie, I'd say. You know, mm-hmm. so that's an issue that I think we run into with Evan Ingram being a rookie tight end and being a guy who has uncertain playing time. I mean, they're going to use Rhett Ellison because he has mm-hmm. on-field NFL value and they paid him a lot of money. It's a very interesting offense to kind of try to diagnose for this year. Another interesting offense for this year, I think, is the Vikings. I don't think they get a lot of respect. You know, they're not flashy. No one really buys into Sam Bradford. You know, everyone scoffs at the NFL completion rate record that he set last year. But, man, they have a gorgeous schedule. They have one of the softest run defense schedules in the league and one of the softest overall schedules, according to Warren Sharp's ratings this year. They did make some upgrades to their offensive line. They've got some weapons. I mean, Steph Diggs, Adam Thielen, Kyle Rudolph, and it looks like they might get something out of Laquon Treadwell this year. Dalvin Cook, though, is a hot-button dude this year. In our Roto World magazine rankings, which are done by me, Rich, Ray Summerlin, Roto Pat, Nick Menzio, I guess I was the highest guy on Dalvin Cook in those rankings. I kind of, you know, kind of hinted at why just there, why I like Dalvin Cook. But are you concerned that he could run into one of these Ameer Abdullah sort of situations where, you know, he's not heavily used in the passing game and not heavily used as a touchdown scorer in scoring position? And so that is a real big threat to him? Or, you know, what are your general thoughts on Dalvin Cook?
I like Dalvin Cook. I think he's a lot better player than his combine showed. I think I think he's a similar guy like to Kareem Hunt as well, in fantasy and in on-field ability as well. You have to like what you're hearing from the Vikings, because the thing about the Vikings is they want to use their players the way they're supposed to be used. They did this last year. I mean, when Diggs got hurt, what'd they do? They moved him into the slot because he couldn't beat dudes over the top anymore. So they moved him in the slot. They had to switch their offensive gears because the offensive line is bad. So they kind of switched to this, you know, the Jim Bob Cooter approach. We've got to get the ball out of our hands. We've got to use Kyle Rudolph. We've got to use Jerick McKinnon out of the backfield. What is going to get in Cook's way is two things, is Latavius Murray and how they view his pass blocking. Because the one thing of Latavius Murray, we can kind of pick apart his game and how he runs a lot. He is really good in pass protection, and coaches tend to put those guys on the field probably more than they should that are in pass protection, you know, for more than they should, I say, from like fantasy sense from us, because we want our guys on the field. So, I mean, and is Murray going to, you know, get the goal line carry? I mean, this is a big back that showed effectiveness in that area last year. He was sixth inside the five carries last year and effective in turning them over into touchdowns. And how they want to use Jerick McKinnon is Jerick McKinnon a guy they're going to use like they did at the back half of last year, where he is used just out of the backfield primarily. I mean, the only people that had more catches the final 7 weeks of the season than Jerick McKinnon were David Johnson and Le'Veon Bell out of the backfield. So, I mean, those two things can get in the way of Dalvin Cook. I still think all around he's definitely the best back there. The offensive line has been upgraded. Still, we're not hanging a hat on them being like a really above average offensive line. So, I mean, there are red flags, I think, that should keep his ADP in check probably more than it should. But in terms of upside, he could easily shut the door on those two guys in that area of the field. He's got the most pass-catching ability, I think, on the roster, and he's still good enough to get goal line carries. So, I mean, he could easily be the guy that kind of weeds out those two guys and takes over the whole offense there.
Awesome. And last question, this Saints backfield. I mean, this is going to be a high-scoring offense. This is a good offensive line with or without Teron Armstead. They were without Teron Armstead for most of last year anyway, and they just used a first-round pick, so they're not going to have to move Andrews Pete out to left tackle where he struggled mightily. So he's going to stay in at left guard, and they'll be able to play Ryan Ramczyk at left tackle. And Max Unger looks like he's going to be back for week one. And they signed Larry Warford, the 340-pound dude from the Lions, just a mammoth mauler. And right tackle Zach Strief is another mauler at like 6'8", 335 pounds. So this team is built to open holes in the running game, and that's precisely what they did last year. They were number one in Football Outsiders adjusted line yards. And I think that they were number eight in Pro Football Focus's yards created before contact per rushing attempt. Really, really good offense. Really, really good offensive line that is built to open holes. where do you stand on Mark Ingram and Adrian Peterson right now? And are you willing to draft them on the same team?
Definitely in these formats I am, where we're in kind of best ball season still and haven't hit the weekly seasonal approach. I love getting both these guys on the same team. And we talk about the Saints. Since Drew Brees has been there, I mean, they've been first or second in skill points generated for fantasy players in the league, first or second every single year. And that includes, you know, they're in the top five of running back almost every year that year of those years too. I still love the discount on Mark Ingram because he's a guy that has been in the same role. I mean, he's a guy that's proven he can occupy on 220 touches and still be an effective fantasy back. He's done it the last 3 years. So, I mean, I love getting the discount on him in that fifth, sixth round when he slides there. I still think that he's probably going to catch probably about 30 more passes than Adrian Peterson will, and he'll probably be second on a team in receptions after Alvin Kamara. And if Alvin Kamara is the guy that's not ready, then his receiving ability only gets enhanced. So, I mean, I still love the discount on Mark Ingram. He's still in his career apex as well. So, I mean, I love that. I love Adrian Peterson and the touchdown potential. We talk about the Saints. They're going to generate a ton of opportunities to score points. That means they're going to generate a ton of opportunities for their running backs to punch in touchdowns. And Adrian Peterson, that's what he does. I mean, I love being able to pair up these guys in these best ball leagues. You don't have to sort out the weeks where one guy gets the bulk of the work or the one guy gets the two touchdowns and the other guy doesn't score. It's a little sketchier in when we get into the weekly formats and you've got to pick and choose the right weeks. But in these best ball leagues, I love going for that mid-round pocket pair of the Saints running back.
Rich, really appreciate the time. And like I said, you had me before you even started talking when I saw your Twitter pictures. Check him out on Twitter, at Lord Reebs. And he's got Evan Silva as his boss over at rotoworld.com, which is pretty cool as well. Thanks so much for the time, Rich. We really appreciate it.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate you getting me on.
All right, so if you're listening to this podcast, you obviously love fantasy football, which you should. It's awesome, which means a lot of you are probably also the commissioners of your league, and you're probably tired of hassling friends and family for fantasy league entry fees. That's why it's time to try TeamStake. They provide fantasy sports leagues with a fully customizable payment collection and payout distribution system at no charge. Completely free to use. They don't take a percentage from the pot. There's no subscription. They don't charge any fees to use the service. It's free payment payout options for all leagues. Safe and secure transactions. Again, here's the key. No money. They're not taking any money from you. It's just a way for you to be able to structure the league entry fees and the payouts. It's TeamStake.com. Check them out. Trust me, it's worth it. TeamStake.com. Speaking of trust, Evan, I trust you anytime there is news that comes down the pike. We're recording this on July 26th. It was Wednesday, 11:40 a.m. Eastern time. So there hasn't been that much news so far in training camp. I'd say probably the big one so far, would you have to say, is the Kenneth Dixon news, Evan?
Yes, yes, absolutely. And, you know, there's a big difference between hindsight analysis and predictive analysis. Predictive analysis usually is like, you know, we're trying to deal in probability. And hindsight analysis is just easy. You know, it's easy to analyze situations that occurred in the past. But when we make mistakes on situations that occurred in the past, we can try to learn from that and then apply that to our predictive analysis going forward. So I'm going to have a hindsight take right now. And I don't know why anyone was drafting Kenneth Dixon in the first place. Okay. And I mean, if you were drafting Kenneth Dixon, you need to reevaluate your process. And it's much easier to say that now that we know that he is out for the season, but he was just a terrible fantasy pick. He was suspended for the first four games. Okay, that doesn't automatically mean that he's going to be back in week five, number one. Number two, you were going to get goose eggs for those first four games. If you're in a redraft season-long league, you're probably dropping Kenneth Dixon. I mean, that's just the way that these things pretty much work. But then when/if Kenneth Dixon came back, he was going to have to deal with Terrence West, who he could not beat out for a lead back job last year, and Danny Woodhead taking away all of his receiving usage. So he essentially would have had almost no fantasy value. So we can learn from these situations. You know, I've made many, many, many mistakes in the past, and I will continue to make mistakes and try to learn from them. But if you were drafting Kenneth Dixon, you need to learn from that mistake. Moving forward, Danny Woodhead is going to eat. We've been talking about this, you know, pretty much all offseason since they signed him. He was one of the best fits in free agency, right up there with DeSean Jackson going to Tampa Bay. In his last three full seasons played, he's been a top 25 PPR back in all three. He did miss two full seasons in there, and he's 32 years old, and he's far from a sure thing, but he has monster PPR upside on a team that is missing almost 400 unaccounted for targets from last year's roster, which is almost 100 more than the next closest team, which is the Rams, who are missing 297. So there's going to be a ton of like touch. Oh, and the Ravens are also missing the seventh most carries from last year's roster. So there's just going to be a ton of redistribution of usage in the Ravens' passing and running games. Danny Woodhead can function in both of those areas. He's obviously a much better receiver than he is, you know, a workhorse running back. You know, their early down guy is going to be Terrence West in all likelihood. But Danny Woodhead is really solidified as a guy who should have a great floor. Again, assuming that he stays healthy, I don't predict injuries. Assuming that he stays healthy, he's going to have a great floor every week, and he's going to be a player who catches, you know, 4 to 6 passes in almost every game, and he's going to get rushing attempts, and he's always been useful in the red zone. Phillip Rivers loved using Danny Woodhead in the red zone. I don't see why Joe Flacco would not. Terrence West is the guy that everybody's talking up right now, however, because, number one, he was already undervalued, and now his stat projections look much better on a sheet of paper. But you have to understand that Terrence West is a replacement level back. You know, he's got like a 1 year, $1.8 million salary. None of it is guaranteed. You know, he's consistently been like a 3.9 to 4.0 yards per carry back. Doesn't add a lot in the passing game. And because the Ravens now know that they are going to be without Kenneth Dixon for the entire season, they are more likely to add competition for Terrence West. So, you know, I would not be rushing out to pile up, you know, a bunch of Terrence West in fantasy drafts, because I think that the Ravens are going to add someone. Their beat writers have mentioned Matt Jones, Alfred Morris, Ryan Matthews. They have a ton of – their coaching staff has a ton of connections to Carlos Hyde. I mean, they hired Greg Roman, who was on the staff that drafted Carlos Hyde out of Ohio State in 2014. And, of course, the brother of John Harbaugh was on that staff as well, Jim Harbaugh with the 49ers. And I think that the 49ers would probably be willing to trade Carlos Hyde for a fourth round pick at most. I think, you know, that's very, very speculative, but, you know, I think that the Ravens are going to start looking at different backs. And if they go get a back who is better than Terrence West, and there are a lot of backs that are better than Terrence West, and I would say, you know, even available backs that are better than Terrence West. And so I think that could become an issue. And I think that D'Angelo Williams is another guy that, if his knee checks out and he was healthy enough to play in the Steelers' final playoff game last year, so he should be pretty healthy right now, he's another guy who could make a lot of sense for the Ravens.
I love it. I love those breakdowns. It's amazing how much of a breakdown you can get just from Kenneth Dixon tearing a meniscus, but that is the time of year we are. Speaking of that time of year, next week begins the often imitated, never duplicated, by far the best in the galaxy rankings, Tears of Evan. Get excited. Tell your friends, tell your enemies, tell your grandma. Tears of Evan starts next week. For right now, though, that was a lot. I'm totally stuffed and full. We're done.
Thanks for listening to the Fantasy Feast Podcast. Make sure to also subscribe to the Ross Tucker Football Podcast, Even Money, and the College Draft Podcast, all available on iTunes at rostucker.com or wherever podcasts can be found.
So I've been telling you guys about TrueCar for a while now, and what's amazing about it is as soon as my wife said, honey, I need to get a new car, I said, TrueCar. Because they have the information on anything that's been sold in your area. Think about it. 3 million cars sold, over 13,000 dealers, over 700,000 pre-owned vehicles available, average savings of over $3,000 off MSRP. Using TrueCar, you can easily find the car you want. And here's the key. TrueCar will show you what other people in your area paid for the car you want. Now you know what a fair price is, so you can feel confident. Before we even started looking, she was looking at Explorers, Tahoes. I said, hey, look at TrueCar, and you can find out exactly what other people have paid in the area. It is awesome. TrueCar customers are more likely to enjoy a faster buying process when they connect with TrueCar certified dealers. Plus, TrueCar users save an average of over $3,000 off MSRP. When you're ready to buy, visit TrueCar to enjoy a more confident car buying experience. Some features not available in all states.